No, I've been throwing my voice there. I hire a man to stand there, and I throw my voice. Well, it's all right.
I don't blame you. I'd throw it myself. Ladies and gentlemen. Gee whiz, I made myself laugh.
I know. You're laughing at something you did on the Ezra Stone program. I wondered why they didn't laugh last night. Now I know you were waiting to laugh tonight at the Aldrich family. Well, all right.
Are we still at the opening?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am privileged at this time to present a very close relative of the star of the Hobby Lobby program of last Sunday. I give you the husband of Portland Hoffa in person.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, Harry, for that. Say, what happened to my name in the thing there?
Oh.
Is there suddenly a law against mentioning my name?
No,
so
I was...
So many laws, I thought something...
No, I was going to mention it, but I didn't have a chance to check with Porties.
With so Portland? Well, what has Portland got to do
well,
with...
Well, things move very quickly in radio, Fred.
I know. I've had two sponsors get out with one my back. I didn't dare look over my shoulder at an audition.
No, I didn't mean that. What I meant is that overnight, you might say, on Hobby Lobby, Portland became a star.
Yeah.
Now, as a star in her own right, she naturally has a voice in deciding who gets billing on this program.
Well, I don't want to seem to be pushing a young boy ahead, whom they say has talent, Harry. But my parents went to a lot of trouble to pick out a name for me. Now, if they knew that people weren't going to use it, they could have given me a number. Seven or something. Seven Allen. Just call me Seven, folks. I have no name.
Well,
I might
Fred,
get to be a big man sometime. 7 3/8. You don't know. You wouldn't know.
Well, I'm sorry, Fred. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll ask Portland about mentioning your name. Say, Porty.
Yes, Harry.
Oh, listen, Porty. I heard you Sunday. Were you swell?
Oh, did you really like it, Harry?
Yeah, I didn't even know you had a hobby.
Say, how about my name? Ask her about my name.
You know, I have a hobby, too, Porty. I collect stamps.
Gosh, that's an unusual hobby, Harry.
Yeah.
How'd you ever get started on stamps?
Well, he probably had a wet tongue and didn't know what else to do with it. Those things are. Harry, will you ask her about mentioning my, you know...
Hello, Porty.
Yeah. Oh,
hello,
now, wait
Peter.
A minute.
Say, did you?
I sure did.
And was it?
It sure was.
That's just the way I read it in the Reader's Digest. Word for word. All seven of them. Now, about my name...
I didn't know you had a hobby, Porty.
Now, look, my...
Say, I've got a hobby, too, Porty. Mm-hmm. I collect old ragged sheet music.
And you play it the way it looks. Now, look, my name...
Look, who cares about music? Now, stamps, there is a real...
What's my name?
Oh, stamps.
I was born in a lunch wagon.
Music. You play it, and what have you got?
Wait a minute, Harry.
Well, what is it?
You
what?
Still haven't mentioned my name.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Ellman.
Dave Ellman. All right, folks. This is your pal, Dave, bringing you the latest news of the week. The Ipana News brings you the world in review. Washington, D.C. Senator Bridges, prominent Republican, suggests streamlining coming Republican convention. Senator says more entertainment and radio technique should be used at convention to attract radio listeners. Ipana News gathering consensus on proposed convention changes, interviews a small-time radio producer, Mr. Sebastian Welch. Now, Mr. Welch, do you think the old-time political conventions were dull on the air?
Oh, they were deadly. No zip, no tempo.
Really?
Tempo was important in radio. I have produced hundreds of radio programs. None of them had any entertainment, but they all had tempo.
I see. With your experience, how would you go about making the Republican convention a good radio show?
Oh, I got the plans right here.
Yes.
Get this. The program opens with an elephant trumpeting. Da-da-da-da! Ta-da! The voice of Orson Welles says spookily, "The Republican Party is on the air."
Yeah.
And then bang! Right into Tom Dewey's theme song, "What's the Reason I'm Not Pleasing You?"
Uh-huh, I see.
And then wham into a fast comedy spot. Vandenberg and Bridges doing an Amos and Andy. A couple of wild jokes. How'd you get that hot foot? I backed into a fireside chat, etc., etc., etc.
And then?
A fast number dedicated to Washington, D.C. You look good to me.
Very good.
And then, bang, another chord. Tom Dewey goes into a short commercial and then sings a parody entitled, "I'm Only a Prosecuting Attorney, But I'm In There Trying."
Excellent.
a song? A song dedicated to Maine and Vermont. You're all I need.
And?
A sock drama ending with Dewey trying to open the front door of the White House. The door is locked. Curtain.
You leave him there, do you?
Shaking the door.
Shaking the door.
And then we give him the teaser. What will Tom do now? Will he get into the White House? Will Tom be out in the cold 4 more years? Tune in again next week and find out.
And then into the finish?
A grand finale. 2,000 Republicans singing, Wishing Will Make It So.
Excellent, I must say. If the Republican Party doesn't use this thing here, now, what do you intend to do with this program?
I'm going to flood it and make another showboat.
Good. Two rudder fellows. Well, nonpartisan good wishes, and thank you, Sebastian Wells. For an unbiased view of the Republican proposal, Ipana News consults a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, presenting Senator Armand Wobble.
Thank you. Fellow constituents, speaking as a Democrat and as a statesman, I say to you...
Never mind that soapbox stuff. Never mind that, Senator. Can you give us a frank opinion?
Well, not a frank opinion, brother. Frank ain't speaking either.
Oh, I see. So I haven't heard. But as a Democrat, do you think the Republicans have got something?
Brother, if the Republicans have got something, they got it while our backs was turned.
It hardly seems possible. But tell me, Senator, what do you think about your opponents turning their convention into a radio show?
We ain't worrying, brother. If the Republicans are going to play to the radio audience, we're pulling a fast one.
How?
Why, the party is entering me as a nominee.
Where does the fast one come in?
I'm using a radio contest. Finish this sentence. I like Senator Wobble for president because...
What's the prize?
If I'm elected, I give you a project. A dam.
And if you're not elected?
I just don't give it.
I thank you. Senator Armand Wobble. And now we show you how Republicans may weed out weak radio sisters and try out their candidates on an amateur hour before they're permitted to appear on the air at the Republican convention. The political amateur hour starts.
Major Mole's amateur hour is on the air.
All right, all right, all right. Once again, we spin our wheel of fortune. Round and round she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. Tonight, we salute the Republican Party. Instead of our usual amateurs, our amateurs tonight are governors, statesmen, and politicians, all trying out for the Republican convention. Now, a vote tonight may send a candidate on the road to fame. The number is Murray Hill, Gimmel, Gimmel, Art Forward. And the phone will be going continuously. I'm staying up myself with the phone tonight. Now, our first amateur is, what is your name, sir?
Well, I'm Governor X of a certain state.
Oh, I see. And how long have you been governor, Governor?
2 years, Major.
Are you up for re-election?
No, I'm out on bail.
You probably won't have much time with us now. What are you going to do for us tonight, Gov?
Well, I got elected going around the state singing hillbilly songs. Yeah. I thought a hillbilly song might get me to the convention.
Well, we'll see. Go right ahead.
I'll be coming around the treasury when I come. I'll be coming around the treasury when I come.
That's all, Governor. Our next amateur, the card here says Norbert Gans. Norbert, that is a name, is it?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And your occupation, Norbert?
I'm trying to be a Republican leader, Major.
You're trying to be a Republican leader?
Yeah, I'm leading, but nobody's following me.
Oh. Well, they may be after your performance tonight. Now, what are you going to do, Norbert?
Well, in my last campaign, I gave speeches panning my opponent with sounds. Animal sounds.
Animal sounds?
Yeah.
We'll go right ahead, Norbert.
Okay, Major, okay. A bonus of Ward 10. My opponent is a yellow dog. He's trying to get votes, throwing the bull. pecan stuck to your shoe. Quack, quack, quack. My opponent is a wolf. In sheep's clothing. I lick him and he'll lay an egg.
You certainly fooled me, Norbert. I looked down on the floor for the egg. Very seldom the major is fooled. And it was there. Our next amateur. Order now, order. We're not going to get any place with the convention if we don't watch it. Order now. Our next amateur is a congressman, Mr. Scampertay. Well, three boys are coming to the microphone. Which boy is Scampertay?
I am, Major. These other two fellows is my vice president and secretary of state in case I'm elected.
I see.
I had a secretary of the Navy, but he scuttled himself.
All right. Let's hear what you do, Scamper.
Well, we sing, baby.
Well, let's, it'll be a surprise to me. Let's have it.
Okay, boys. One, two.
South of the budget, down Washington way. That's where we'd gladly go and never throw your dough away. We'll cut down on taxes. Public debts we'll repay.
All right. Scampertate and Company will join. That'll bring back barbershops for 20 miles around, that trio. Scampertate and Company will join Unit Number 3 opening at the Republican Convention this spring. Our program ends. Good evening, friends. Miss Wynn Murray, a little girl who has hustled here on her scooter to be with us tonight, by insistent popular demand, by a man who forgot to leave his name apparently, slipped a message under the door, has asked Miss Murray to sing Say CC. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll all come just a little closer to your radio.
Ah, there you are, Mr. Allen. I've been looking all over for you.
Just as a matter of curiosity, or did you perchance want my autograph?
Your autograph, exactly. Now, if you'll just sign this paper here...
Now, wait a minute. Let's see that paper. Why, it's full of two-wits, whereases, and for all I know, writs of habeas corpuses.
Ah, but when you sign on the dotted line and take a slight, I might even say an infinitesimal premium, you are eligible for the full benefits from my company's unique insurance plan, to wit.
I was afraid of that.
Well, don't be alarmed, Mr. Allen. Under the terms of this policy, you are insured against the common cold.
You mean if I take out this policy, I can't catch cold?
Oh, no, but if and when you do catch cold, we pay you later on when it lays you up.
Well, thank you, my friend, but when I have a cold, I don't wait until later on. I do something about it right away. And that's why I like Harry's plan much better.
Well, Fred, our plan certainly is a common sense one. Just take Sal Hepatic.
So now, ladies and gentlemen...
Dear Portland, we heard you last Sunday and wish you...
Oh, wait a minute, Portland. What is this?
Oh, I'm reading my fan mail from Hobby Lobby.
Again, Hobby Lobby. What is your hobby anyway?
Didn't you hear me? My hobby is cooking.
Cooking?
Yes. In my class at cooking school, I was voted most likely to succeed.
Really?
I cooked the stew of the month.
The stew of the month? Anybody we know?
And I got honorable mention for frying.
Something tells me that in a kitchen, you would be the Lucretia Borgia of this generation. We got permission to mention her name. We had to call up Lucretia.
You're just talking. You never ate any of my cookies.
Well, I was at your house Christmas Eve, wasn't I?
Oh, yes, the night I made the pound cake.
The pound cake. That cake weighed 20 pounds if it weighed an ounce. Why, it took three of you to lift it out of the oven, didn't it?
Yes, it takes three people to lift anything I cook.
I'm just a heavy cooker.
A heavy cooker is right.
My apple dumpling was good, wasn't it?
Yes, the apple dumpling was. When I got through with your dumpling, I felt as though I had swallowed Grant's tomb.
You've just got a thin stomach, that's all.
Oh, yeah? Have you seen me profile coming downstairs? Name me one thing you can cook.
Scotch broth.
What is scotch broth?
It's plain hot water poured in a place that's just been used for soup.
I give up. Who is your change writers, haven't you? Your stuff's getting better, I know. Who is your... Yeah? What are you laughing at, huh? All right. Now, enough fun. Let's get back to the dialogue. Who is our guest tonight?
Well, on my birthday last week, somebody sent me a Western Union singing telegram.
Fine.
And when the girl finished singing, I invited her over.
Well?
Mr. Allen, meet Miss Margaret Mellish.
Well, good evening, Miss Mellish.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Are you not excusing yourself? You walk away from Miss Mellish and I and without saying excuse me?
Excuse me, sir.
That's better. We may not be entertaining, but we'll be polite as long as... We'll go to the post even if it's only Emily. Well, where were we? Good evening. Thank you. Good. This is only blank papers. We're making it all up. Miss Mellish? Miss Mellish, this is tonight's the... you are one of the Western Union singing telegram girls, Miss Mellish.
That's right.
I have received many vocal telegrams, but this is the first time I've ever seen one of the soloists.
We seldom make personal appearances, Mr. Allen.
You're not going to ad-lib, too, are you? Now, wait a minute. There is a limit to which this can be carried. Tell me, Miss Mellish, how far back does your career as a 10-word Jessica Dragonette go?
I started in April 1938. That's when our company inaugurated the singing telegram service.
Well, does a girl require any vocal training to become a Western Union chanteuse?
Not at all, Mr. Allen. I was just a regular operator before I started singing.
You hadn't appeared at Town Hall or Carnegie?
No, I had never sung before in my life.
Well, weren't you pretty nervous when you made your prepaid debut?
I was scared stiff.
Really?
But singing is all in a day's work to me now.
You're an old wow hand now, huh? Well, you girls don't do as we have to do in radio, do you? Stop in the middle of a singagram for a commercial?
No, we sing our messages right through.
But you know, I think you have a better system than we have. It certainly would be embarrassing over at your place to send us, let's say, a wedding anniversary singagram to Eddie Cantor. Imagine singing, "Happy anniversary to you." And then the commercial comes in and says, "If you want a boy, call Western Union." But tell me, Miss Mellish, huh? There's still hope for radio and you can get a laugh out of Cantor yet. Tell me, Miss Mellish, how many sopranos and contraltos does the company keep on its regular staff?
There are 10 of us at our New York office, but around the holidays, when the messages increase, we have as many as 30 girls.
Well, which holiday do you find is the busiest?
I would say Valentine's Day.
Well, Valentine's Day is only a week off, and since some of our listeners may not be familiar with your singing service, I wonder if you'd be kind enough to give us a sample greeting.
I'll be glad to, Mr. Allen.
Well, fine. Now, let us say that you were in your office. A Valentine greeting comes in for me. You ring me at my apartment. Hello?
Mr. Fred Allen?
Yes?
This is Western Union calling. We have a Valentine's Day greeting for you.
Yes?
My darling, I love you so dearly. You're charming, you're sweet and divine. I ask of you, sweetheart, sincerely, will you be my sweet Valentine?
Well, that was perfect. That was perfect. You know, I just happen to think, Miss Mellish, February 14th is Jack Benny's birthday. Now, could you... That's a fine Valentine old man Benny gave the country, huh? Born on the 14th, yet, with lace on him. But not up over his ears. Could you sing Benny that same greeting from me next Wednesday?
I'll be glad to.
Oh, boy. When Benny hears that, will you be my sweet Valentine? I guarantee that mail-order toupee of his will curl like Phil Harris's hair. Say, it must be sort of a shock for a person who's sitting home to receive a singing telegram when they're totally unprepared. Now, how do people generally react when you call them up and then abruptly, let us say, burst into song?
Well, sometimes it takes them a few minutes to get the idea, but when they do, they're generally delighted.
Well, have you ever been called on to croon greetings to any of the famous stars?
Yes, we've sent messages to Lawrence Tibbett and John Charles Thomas.
John Charles Thomas, the man with the three first names? You'll have to rush it. We're pressed for time. Weren't you embarrassed when you were ordered to sing to Lawrence Tibbett?
Yes, the girls were so frightened, they all refused to call Mr. Tibbett.
And what did you do?
We finally decided there was safety in numbers, and four of us sang to him a quartet arrangement.
Well, what was Mr. Tibbett's reaction? Did he answer with a cluster of Figaro's from force of habit?
No, he just hung up.
Which might be construed as a form of criticism. Well, have you had any other odd experiences in the line of duty, Miss Mellish?
Well, one afternoon I was asked to sing a birthday message to a dog.
It could happen to a dog, and did. But tell me, has the swing influence bothered your Western Union choir?
How do you mean, Miss Dallas?
Well, hasn't some jitterbug ever shown up with a jivogram? You know, a rug cutter's message to his mother on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to you. Fudarakisaki, chop, chop, chop. Shoot the kisses to me, ma girl.
No, thank heaven. We haven't had one of those yet.
Congratulations. That'll be 20 cents for changing your mind. Well, yes, sir. You charge me for two extra words in the office now. You put in two extra words. Going to California, it might run into $7 here. I'll have to count it up. Well, Miss Mellish. We must control ourselves. We're coming to the close of a whopping interview here. Miss Mellish, it's been a treat to have you stop by for this little chat.
I've enjoyed it, Mr. Allen.
Now, before you go, I have a little surprise for you. Now, you've been very nice tonight, and you spent all of your time singing greetings to others. Tonight, we're going to sing a message to you. You ready, boys?
Yes, Chief.
One, two.
Happy good night to you. Happy good night to you. Happy good night, Miss Mellish. Happy bonsoir to you. 30 cents collect.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Allen.
You, and good night, Miss Margaret Mellish. Now, ladies and gentlemen. In a little old house lives a little old lady with her little old dog, Hamish. Both as Scottish as oatmeal. And if you'll wait till I get the window open, there, you can hear Aunt Maggie saying to her dog,
"Well, Hamish, we've got a very busy day ahead of us. I'm going to put up apple butter." Oh, I know you don't like it, but other people do. Now, go out on the porch. There's the telephone, and I've got to answer it. Hello. Oh, hello, Mabel. How is Ned feeling today? He is. Oh, well, it's a bad time to catch a cold. You have? Well, I'll keep him in the house. Oh, I know men don't like seeing indoors. Mabel, why don't you try and give him some salepathica? Oh, I'd never be without it. It's very helpful for a cold. Mrs. Google says it's done wonders for her man. I can't give you all the medical whys and wherefores, but if you'll open your radio tonight, you'll hear Harry Von Zell explain it something like this.
Sparkling sal hepatica helps fight colds faster, and you can check the reasons why it does with your own doctor. First, sal hepatica is speedy.
This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Round Table, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. These little sessions are entirely unrehearsed. Fred is taking his place now at the round table, where, in addition to heckling the announcer...
Yes. Not
he's about
well,
to meet...
I'll say not only unrehearsed, I'll say unprepared. You can do that.
Well, are you ready for the forum, Fred?
Yes, ready or not, I shall be caught. The forum is officially open. If Fordle will be kind enough to introduce the first... Would you sit down, Mr. Van Steeden? I may have to leave here in a hurry, and you're right in my path. If I go that way, there's no sun. Our first guest, Portland, please.
Mr. Lee Barth from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mr. Barth, and welcome to our little guild here. May I ask your profession?
I'm a pictorial sign painter, Mr. Allen.
Well, a pictorial sign painter.
Yes.
Your sign painting is restricted to pictures or designs or instead of letters?
No, not necessarily. I'm a pictorial painter, like, say, we are a color designer.
Oh, I see. I thought that pictorial had something to do with fish, and I thought instantly of the Wrigley sign, those pictorial... Oh, it's piscatorial. I forget. But you don't do any of the large electric signs like they have on Broadway, do you?
No, I don't go up that high.
Like that horse race sign that's on... Well, you'd have to have a ladder, naturally. But like that horse race sign on top of the Strand or that other building, you don't do work like that, do you?
No, that's neon. It comes under the heading of neon work.
Neon work. I know they have that horse race up there. Tell me they caught a fellow the other day talking to the electrician who has charge of repairing. He was a tout, and he was trying to get the electrician to short-circuit the favorite in one of the races. I don't know how it came out. They have a form sheet that comes out in the electrical journal that touts those things. But, all right, thank you a lot, Mr. Barr.
Next, Mrs. Alberta Steele from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Good evening, Mrs. Steele.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
What are you doing in New York? Do you mind if I ask you?
I'm here on a visit.
On a visit?
Mm-hmm. Just a pleasure trip.
Just a pleasure trip. Mm-hmm. And you include this visit to our program as part of the pleasure?
Indeed, yes.
Oh, you're trying to balance it so that you won't have too much enjoyment and let this sort of...
No, this is the best part of the visit.
Well, we're very happy to have you here from Philadelphia.
Thank you.
If you see anybody over there looking for me, tell them I went that way. Point towards Trenton. The next, Portland?
Mr. Dave Oakes, New York City.
Good evening, Mr. Oakes. May I ask your...
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
That's a formality. Now, may I ask... Now, your boss can't do it. Now, you heard me say that. You know, I just originated. I said, good evening, Mr. Oates. I don't open my mouth, and you got my line stolen. What is your business, Mr. Oates?
Why, I'm a hotel clerk, Mr. Allen.
A hotel clerk?
Yes, sir.
In any particular key, or...
Well, at the present, I'm unemployed, but I have, though, been in different cities, that is, such as Louisville, Toledo, Detroit, Cincinnati, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston.
Not with the same hotel, though. I mean, you weren't a night clerk in a trailer or anything like that, were you? Well, it's very interesting. I played those hotels, not the hotels. I played theaters in the towns, and the salaries we were getting in those days, I didn't live in hotels. I wouldn't know much about your business. Well, that about brings us to our question. Tonight, we maltreat a matter that has been discussed many times by psychologists and authorities. Are we going to have time to do the question? What time is it now? One more minute. Well, let's not bother with the question. Just let's sit around. And God, I can only read the question in a minute. I'll read it, huh? You couldn't stretch there. You haven't got an old rubber minute that'll stretch, have you? But this question has been discussed many times by psychologists and authorities on the proper care of children. Modern mothers have been taken to task for permitting nurses and governesses to practically raise their children. Authorities claiming that the mother should care for the children when first impressions and attachments are formed. Now, our question tonight is, should a mother turn her entire responsibility over to a nurse? Should a mother devote all of her time to the child? Or should mother and nurse cooperate? Now, Mr. Boff, may we ask you, what is your opinion?
Mother and nurse should cooperate and split it 50-50.
50-50, so that the child would not be attracted away from the mother 100% in later life. You believe that the seeds of love are sown at the cradle, do you?
I do.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bath. That was my contention, too. Miss Steele, may I ask how you feel about the mother and junior problem?
I agree with Mr. Barth, Mr. Allen.
You do?
Yes. I think the mother is entitled to have a maid for a child if she can afford it, but she should be partially devoted so the child is not too greatly separated from her and everybody's happy, I think, if that's the arrangement.
You don't believe that some of these modern mothers who are so busy with their bridge clubs and social activities that babies can only see them by appointment? I mean, you don't...
No, I don't.
Do well, I don't know much about nurses. Where we lived... We only saw a nurse when they had a Red Cross drive or something come to town. When a baby was born up our way, the parents gave the child a safety pin and 4 yards of white cloth, and it was every man for himself. But, Mr. Oakes, how do you feel about it?
Well, frankly speaking, Mr. Allen, I can't agree with my two friends here at this forum.
Just a minute, Mr. Oakes. You are apparently a hostile element here. Now, are you... Now, before we get started, let me ask you one thing before you disagree with Mrs. Steele, who is married, and Mr. Barth.
Yes, sir.
I know Mr. Barth is married. Without asking him, he has that look. That behind the perambulator look there. Are you married?
No, Mr.
Well, then you can't. Now, wait a minute. There's another bachelor. Why don't you two guys get together and talk the thing over? But you haven't any little Oaks, naturally, running around the house. But I don't think that you are then in a position to contradict Mrs. Steele and Mr. Barth, and I am confident that the thousands I'm about to close the forum. I don't like to shut you off, Mr. Oaks. Believe me, if it was up to me, you could talk as long as you wanted to. I have trouble. The man just pointed to me. He says you're through. He says you're having a bad time. What am I going to do, Mr. Oaks? I've got it. But I will say, I'm confident that the thousands of babies around the country who are not tuned in tonight will never know that this discussion has taken place. And I'm quite sure the next generation is capable of growing up without any help from me. Just remember, you little kiddies who are home, no matter what your nurse tells you, Confucius says, a jockey's best friend on a rainy day is his mother. The forum stands adjourned. Thank you all for your... Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Wynn Murray explains why she is so crowded subcutaneously. Wynn sings, I've got you under my skin. I thought there were two of you in there with me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, our own Harry Von Zell. Our own Harry Von Zell has a very important message for you, Mr. Fonzie. I told you. Our own Harry Von Zell. We're late, Harry. Now, no monkey business. You always start things. Mr. Fonzie, that's your cue.
Well, thank you very much, Fred.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the mighty Alan R. Players bow to the recent biographical trend taken by the motion picture. The movies have given you the lives of the men who were responsible for the hydrophobia antitoxin, the Suez Canal, and the telephone. But what about the little fellows in history? Who invented the button hook, long underwear, and the hot water bottle? Well, tonight we pay biographical tribute to one of these unsung geniuses. Our cavalcade is called The True Story of Belvedere Trawl, or the Tale Behind the Teabag. Over to you, Peter. Belvedere Trawl was a frowsy and insignificant small-town inventor whose early life had been frittered away inventing useless gadgets. One night, as Belvedere sat in his dingy laboratory, poring over his workbench and a nasty letter from a loan shark, his sweetheart, Constance Fang, Answer.
Belvedere.
Oh, it's you, Constance.
I thought you was going to take me coasting.
Was I?
I've been waiting at the post office with my sled for 3 hours.
I'm sorry, Constance. I've been busy inventing.
Inventing? We've been engaged for 25 years, and you ain't invented nothing.
Well, I'll invent something someday, Constance. I ain't giving up.
Well, I am. Tonight's the silver anniversary of our engagement, and I'm breaking it.
Oh, don't be hasty, Constance. Give me one more chance.
No, Belvedere. I'll take my flexible flyer and go.
But I'm working on something that'll make a fortune.
What's that?
Well, last year, 2,000 people choked to death swallowing loose tea leaves.
Are you inventing something to keep tea leaves together?
Yeah, and yesterday I almost had it. I glued some tea into a ball and put it into the hot water.
Did the glue keep the leaves from coming loose?
Yeah. There was only one hitch.
What?
After drinking the tea, I couldn't get my mouth open. I gotta find another way.
Oh, not tonight, Belvy. You're tired. Why, look at them bags under your eyes.
Yeah, I know. Bags. That's it, Constance. Tea and bags. I'll invent a tea bag.
A tea bag?
Yeah, where's my hat and windbreaker? I'm leaving for New York.
Belvy.
All I gotta get is a little bag and some tea, and I'm on my way.
Is it so long, Belvy?
No, it's oolong, honey. Goodbye.
The minute Belvedere Trawl stepped from the bus in New York City, he asked a kind stranger to direct him to the Tasty Tea Company. The kind stranger, who was busy picking Belvedere's pocket at the time, took one hand out of Belvy's trousers to point out the way. Minus his money belt and social security card, Belvedere dashed to the chromium offices of the Tasty Tea Company, and just in time, As Belvedere entered the room, Mr. Tasty was addressing his board of directors.
Gentlemen, the number of fatalities caused by people choking on loose tea leaves is mounting. This is a crisis.
This stock will be sold. The market will go down.
Gentlemen, please. We must find a way to control the tea leaf.
Mr. Tasty, man!
Oh, here. Tasty. Here, somebody throw this bum out of here.
But I have an invention. I can control the tea leaf.
Who is this chap?
Belvedere Trawl.
You look like the man who jumped on the stage at the Barrymore opening.
Well, look. Don't be hasty, Mr. Tasty. What's this cup of hot water here on the table?
Now, here, that's for our tea-tasting demonstration. Don't touch that cup, Trawl.
I'll just plop my tea bag into this hot water and I'll show you.
Here, take that Bull Durham sack out of my hot water.
But look, Mr. Tasty, it's turning pink.
Why, yes.
Now it's red.
Gad, Trawl, you've made tea.
And not a leaf left loose in the cup.
Why, this is...
That proves my tea bag works, gentlemen.
Amazing, Trawl. Look here. I'll give you $1 million for a 6-month option on your tea bag.
Gosh, $1 million.
Yes. Is that satisfactory?
It suits me to a T.
And so, Belvedere Trawl suddenly found himself a millionaire. Flushed with success, he moved from his modest 5-room suite on the Bowery to a lavish penthouse on Park Avenue. The interior... Fawned upon by society, our hero only too soon forgot his small-town days and his eternal sweetheart, Constance Fang. Then one day, as Belvedere straddled his gold chaise long, the butler ushered in a strange, shabby woman.
This way, madam.
Belvedere.
Who are you, spinster?
I'm Constance Fang, your old sweetheart. I've come all the way to New York to see you.
Well, you've seen me. Good day.
Belvy, ain't you taking me to dinner?
Oh, not tonight. I'm dining at Delmonico's with the Floridora Sextet.
What about tomorrow night?
Oh, tomorrow Anna Held is taking a milk bath for the press. I'm holding the cow.
I guess I ain't good enough for you no more.
Frankly, no. Wearing those cretonne gaiters and that coonskin Mother Hubbard, you're provincial. Please leave. Here's a little memento for you.
Belvy, a tea bag. I shall always treasure it.
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, you can go through life holding the bag.
Ah, well Gulf had indeed calloused our hero. For 6 months, while his teabag royalties poured in, Belvedere made spending history. 3 Stanley steamers cluttered his garage. Rich food lay about the larder and on the floor until the mice in Belvedere's penthouse all had the gout. But the hour of reckoning was at hand. The day for the Tasty Tea Company to take up its auction on the tea bag arrived. And Mr. Tasty said,
"Your option is canceled, Troll.
What?
From now on, I'm going to make tea bags without paying you a cent in royalties."
"But my tea bag is patented. I'll make tea bags myself."
"You will, eh? What do you need to tie your tea bags at the top, Troll?"
"String."
"String, that's it. Well, I've cornered the market on string. Go ahead, make your tea bags. You can't buy an inch of string in America to tie them up."
"Dad, I'm undone. My tea bag is ruined."
"You bet it's ruined. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that string."
His riches vanished. Broken in purse and spirit, Belvedere Troll became a roving derelict. His only source of income was an occasional appearance on We the People, where he got his fares, and he always came from San Francisco. After years of aimless drifting, Belvedere finally wandered back to his old hometown. He went to his little combination cottage and laboratory, where once he had dreamed and toiled. He opened the door and entered.
"Lord, place is full of cobwebs. Looks like nobody's been in here since I left 20 years ago. I'll light the candle. Well, what's this letter on the table? "Dear Mr. Troll, since we have never received notice from you to stop delivering milk, this is to advise that your unpaid milk bill is now $1,462.47. Oh, my, who's to the door? Come in.
Belvedere.
Oh, yeah. What's your name again?
Constance.
Constance.
I seen the light in your lab, Belvy. I knew you was back.
You ain't been waiting for me all these years.
At my age, what else could I do?
But I ain't worthy, Constance.
Never mind the details. We'll get married.
No, it's too late. I'm a failure.
Love is blind, Belvy.
Lost my money, lost my tea bag.
Oh, Lord, who's this? Me here in the lab without a chaperone.
Come in.
Belvedere Troll?
Yes?
I'm the 20th Century Fox Movie Company.
Yes?
We want to buy the rights to the story of your life.
My life?
Yes. Mr. Zanuck has decided that the story of your life will make a great picture.
But I...
No one disagrees with Mr. Zanuck.
But I'm a failure.
A failure? Do you know who will portray you on the screen?
Who?
The man who made Stephen Foster. The man who made Alexander Graham Bell.
Not.
Yes. Don Amici.
Don Amici?
Yes.
Don Amici. Then I am a success. It's just like that poet Longfellow said.
What did Longfellow say?
Lives of great men all remind us we can look on death as peachy. Hollywood will reincarnate us. We'll come back as Don Amici.
So, Belvedere Troll, the inventor of the tea bag, and his perennial sweetheart, Constance Fang, were married and lived happily even after. And only last week, when Belvedere found his elderly wife sewing a tiny garment and said, "Darling, is this?" Constance looked up, a gleam in her eye, and said, "No, dear, it's a tea bag." The end.
Ladies and gentlemen, shortly after this program is over tonight, some of you are going to make a serious mistake. You're going to clean your teeth and go to bed. But merely to clean your teeth without massaging your gums is a mistake and a neglect that may cause future trouble. Because gums, too, need constant care. Care you can help give by massaging them faithfully with Ipana toothpaste. You see, teeth are seldom sparkling and bright when gums are tender and soft. And today's creamy, well-cooked foods rob your gums of the vigorous chewing and exercise they need for health. That's why they often grow flabby and weak and flash a warning signal, a tinge of pink on your toothbrush.
When you see that, see your dentist. Quite often, his verdict will simply be,
your gums have grown lazy from lack of exercise. They need more stimulation to keep them firm and healthy.
And very often, as so many dentists do, he will add,
your gums will respond to the healthful stimulation of Ipana toothpaste and massage.
So get a tube of Ipana from your drugstore tonight and faithfully use it. Remember that a recent survey conducted by a famous national magazine...